disappointed in the actions of the police in Montreal. Overall, they've been trying to make an effort to make it safe for the events that have been happening. And also, we've had rallies. We've had our ceremonial lodges raised up in prayer. We've had music festivals, because the Voice of Idle No More is creative, it's prayerful, it's ceremonial, and it's powerful. And we've even had like spoken word poets come to the teach-ins. We call them teach-ins because our aim is to educate and let people know and let the world know that these Canadian corporations do not have our consent on our territories and anywhere else in the world.
Well, we're going to have to wrap it up. Are there any sources on the web or elsewhere where people can go to learn more about what's going on in Canada with Idle No More, with what you're involved in?
You can go to our website, www.idlenomore.ca, and you could add your name to our list of emails that we mass email all of our people who are on our website, and so add your name to it. We'll send you, and we even have text messaging now.
Okay, well, listen, thank you very much, Sylvia, speaking to us from her home in Saskatchewan. And I've been speaking with Sylvia McAdam, born and raised on the Big River First Nations Reserve in Saskatchewan. She holds degrees in law and human justice and teaches at the First Nations University. She's one of four women who started the Idle No More movement in response to Canada's changes in the several major bills that have changed the whole relationship with the First Nations people. And I'm Paul Ruland, and this has been KBOO News. Thanks for listening.
You are listening to KBOO, Portland 90.7 FM, Portland 91.9, Hood River in the Gorge, 104.3 FM, Philomath and Corvallis. And next up, Right to Survive.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to sponsor two presentations by Nicole Foss and Lawrence Bomert. Nicole is a big picture thinker in the areas of finance, energy, and the environment, and Lawrence is an inspiring and energetic community organizer from New Zealand. Together, they'll be talking about the smart, simple, and creative ways people are reinventing our world using tools like local currencies, collaborative consumption, green projects, and political organizing. Nicole Foss and Lawrence Bomert will be speaking at 7 p.m. October 9th at the First Congregational Church, 4515 Southwest West Hills Road in Corvallis, and again at 7 p.m. on October 10th at Tabor Space, Southeast 55th and Belmont in Portland. More information can be found on the right-hand side of kboo.fm under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair-accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212, in Vancouver at 360-694-1234, or radiocab.net. Right to Survive.
You're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 in Portland. I'm Ibrahim Mubarak of Right to Survive. On this show, we go to Ground Zero, Portland, Oregon, and report news and stories that corporate media don't cover. We'll bring the uncut reality from the perspective of the unhoused community.
This is Lisa Fay with Right to Survive Radio. R2S Radio goes into the houseless community, making their voices heard, speaking to individuals on subjects that directly relate to their daily struggles.
Somebody help me.
That's work.
This is not healthy.
Oh, man.
I am not wealthy.
What I do, have the power to break the chains.
Doing what's right, you.
Welcome to Right to Survive Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Fay. Tonight, we have a very charged topic on police profiling. Every day here in Portland, people as well as police are unjustly profiling, targeting and harassing people, citizens based on their social, economic, or racial status. Our interviews tonight are from victims of police profiling, as well as people who are in the struggle to end such profiling and discrimination.
In a little tent, oh, when just like the river I've been running ever since. It's been a long, long time coming, but I know change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will.
This is Ibrahim Mubarak for Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And in today's segment, we are in Portland, Oregon, in the houseless community. And we're in Terry Strong Park talking about profiling. And today I'm here with
Stephen Brandkamp.
Stephen Brandkamp, how long have you been houseless?
About a year now.
And where are you from?
I came in from Florida.
So what brings you with your travel?
My friend had a job out here, and honestly, I was tired of working for the system. I left a condo, I gave away all my possessions, and came out here.
Oh, and that's adamant.
Yeah, I found Occupy, so went from there.
You found the cause, huh? Are you happy with this cause?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Can you explain the situation where you were profiled?
Well, being homeless in general, if you have a pack or anything that even resembles houseless status at all, you get profiled by the police instantly. You can tell simply by the looks on their faces. Me specifically, all over the place, just sitting on the side of the road or whatever.
And what does that feel like when that happens to you? I mean, you came from a condominium to concrete.
Yeah, no.
And so being used to just walking into place, I mean, you ain't dressed like you were now, and people just either opened the door for you or shook your hand and congratulated you. Now, you're the same person, but in a different situation. So how does that feel, that transformation or that metamorphosis?
It's funny. I grew up poor. I grew up in a, ghetto on Staten Island, New York, basically. My family, a lot of charity work with things like Right to Survive, but in New York, it was Project Hospitality on Staten Island. It wasn't that much of a change, in the sense that, as I grew up, I, went into jobs and, had a condo and money and things like that. But, growing up, no real transition, really. So it didn't really bother me initially coming out here. So that's why I didn't, really mind doing it.
Yeah. So when you got profiled, how did that bother you?
Well,
not your element zone here, and because you're sitting down, you could be tired or you want to sit down and take a sip of water. Here the police come, want to search you, search your belongings, and say you can't sit there.
Oh, like today, for instance, I showed up and found all my stuff rifled through by Homeland Security.
Oh, wow. So how does that make you feel?
Bad for them. They don't know what they're doing. Huh. Until it's too late. I feel more bad for them than I do for me. I know better.
That's interesting, because in my interview before your, I mentioned, does this sound or seem like 1936 Nazi Germany? Now you saying it, so, three of us, yeah. Some awareness needs to be put out there.
Yeah, no, I agree. And the awareness is out there. It's just, it's clouded, society in general. The way our system's laid out, it's, corporate media, for instance, it's designed to keep people subdued and not paying attention to what's actually going on.
Living on the inside, people who watching the main media, who's the news is dictated to take out reality. How does the police profile the houseless? Because, what if they walking home from work and they work in construction, they sit down? What can you tell?
Well, I said before, anything that makes you seem homeless. Big gear, shopping cart, for instance, anything like that. Dirty clothing.
Well, you're saying the police look for people by their dress code and their possessions, and then they go mess with. We want to say mess with, okay?
anything like that. Grungy looking clothing, large backpacks, shopping carts.
Okay. Do you see any end to profiling?
Hopefully.
Okay. And what you think should be done?
That's very difficult, because it's funny, humans in general profile constantly. You need to a certain extent. But when it comes down to profiling social groups and things like that, it's a gray area. It's very difficult to end that, you know, socially. It's like they're not allowed to profile criminals. It's a gray area. It's like, how far should they be able to go with that, as opposed to, you know, when you're disparaging an economic class, it's very hard to.
Does this newfound type of profiling that the Portland police and Clean and Safe and city officials and business owners and anybody living in a condominium, does that go against your constitutional right?
Yeah, I'm sure Jose brought it up here. Houseless being brought into social class, economic class, minority. Yeah, it would be, targeting homeless people simply because of a shopping cart or, you know, large backpacks. That would be going against a minority group. And it's sad that we actually, as a country, created a minority group based on money. It's beyond skin color. You know, if you don't have enough paper in your pocket, then, you know, you're going to jail.
So it's really your social status that think you should. You being profiled or targeted. I can't pay my taxes. Oh, make me want to holler. Throw up both my hands. Yeah. This is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And in today's topic, we're in Portland, Oregon on Ground Zero in a houseless community in Terry Shrunk Park. And we're talking about being profiled. And I'm here today with...
The Crown Prince.
The Crown Prince. How long have you been houseless, Crown Prince?
One year.
And in your year, have you ever been profiled?
No.
You haven't been profiled. Have you ever seen anybody being profiled?
Yes.
And can you describe that or tell us about it?
No.
You don't want to? Okay. I'm hearing that they just come in here and go look
through
your
stuff. They go through our clothes, our stuff. They say that they have the right to come in your room, your tent, and just go through all your stuff because they're looking for knives and stuff like that. But at the same time, our knives are mostly sitting on the side of us, so what are you really looking for? Right. You know? Right. So they got all kinds of things. Then one kid, he was out here just dancing, talk back to him, and tell him, and he read right to right, and they still took him to jail. You know, then they say, you can't have a structure, so we break the structures down and put up our umbrellas on the inside. That's no longer a structure. You see, it's just a little... just a tent laying flat, and you got an umbrella on it, so it's really not built as no structure. Right. But they say we can't even have that, you know. Mm-hmm. So what rights do you have? None. They're doing it consistently. They came once about 10 o'clock, came right back at 11:45. No, 11:15. Mm-hmm. So how you going to say random, and it's every few minutes or whatever you get to that damn ready?
So do you think if I was in a suit, and had on shiny shoes and sitting down here with the police come?
Yes. A lot of people have been down here. A lot of guys bring their own cameras. A lot of the stations come down. Different people from different organizations have been down and see what's going on. And one of them, there was two people arguing about to get into a fight. You know, a kid was up a tree trying to see it. Gave him a ticket. Mm-hmm. Not the two getting ready to fight. So what kind of mess is that?
So were you saying because you houseless, if I wasn't houseless, would they ask to go through my bags?
I don't know how that would be like, because if they're saying anyone on their property, mm-hmm. they can go through your bag. So what I do is pull my tent off of the property until they leave, and when they leave, pull the tent back on. Mm-hmm. It's like move out on city property. Right. Just got to be smarter than that.
Right. And by you being a person of color, they would come after you more, you think?
Less.
Less? Mm-hmm. Why less?
Because there's not that many people of color down here. These are all poor white kids. Well, and by us being around, we do help them survive this. Because we've been through this.
Right.
It ain't nothing new.
Okay. Well, how you think you can end, or what will end profiling, people being profiled?
Well, we keep having sex like these kids are, and we're going to be one color.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, my friend. You're welcome. Thank you.
Paranoia strikes deep. Into your life it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound?
This is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio, KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And today we in Ground Zero, Portland, in a houseless community, and our topic today is profiling. And I'm here with
Willow Frost.
And Willow, how long have you been houseless?
About 7 years now.
Yeah. And where are you from?
Right here in Portland.
Do you want to explain how you became houseless?
I became houseless by choice, and I've stayed houseless by circumstance. I decided, you know what, just drop me off on the streets of Portland, I'll be fine.
Did you feel a sense of belonging, and because you was in foster care, did you feel you was targeted or profiled?
Well, as an LGBT youth, I feel like the state didn't put quite as much effort into keeping me stable as they would a regular person, what they would consider a normal person.
Besides your house and your situation in the foster care, have you ever been profiled?
Well, not overtly. Every once in a while, I participate in some LGBT functions, like the Pride Parade, or some stuff with the Sexual Minority Youth Resource Center. And I'll dress up for it. I'm trans, so I put some makeup on, and if I have a skirt that fits me, I'll wear a skirt. I feel like people look at me funny when I do it, but I wouldn't really call that overtly profiling me.
What does that feel like?
Well, it feels slightly irritating, and when I do, I'm like, hey, you never seen someone in a skirt before?
And how do you see profiling happen in Portland or on the street?
Well, I don't really spend a whole lot of time roaming the streets, so I don't see a lot of the police action that a lot of people do. But when I do see stuff, it's mostly just people, just your every average day Joe, looking down on the homeless and being like, God dang, those people stank. Or I'll look on forums online and I'll see comments that were a plague on society. It's more classism than racism or sexism that I see.
So tell me this, what's the difference between harassment, discrimination, classism, and profiling?
Well, I think that a judgment based on an opinion is the defining factor. It's when you make a judgment and it comes out as classism, it's more like an opinion. You can decide based on personal judgments. I think it's more based on official capacity than it is based on anything else. You call it profiling when you're doing it, when it's an official thing, like if it's the police or if it's somebody denying you services because of what you look like. You call it classism for the same reasons, but usually it's more of a personal vendetta, if that makes sense at all.
It makes a lot of sense. So how do you think the police know how to profile someone?
Well, when it comes to the homeless situation, it's fairly easy. Not a whole lot of houseless people have the wherewithal to keep their clothes clean, take showers on a regular basis. And some, I'm not saying most or even half, have a drug problem or have sleep disorders or something that makes them stand out from people that are inside and can sleep and eat regularly. So it's fairly easy to point out a homeless person sometimes. And those are the people that I think that the police target. There's a lot of homeless people that I see that the police not even look twice at because they look just like...
Do you think profile would ever end?
No. That's just like I think racism and classism will never end. Everybody makes judgments based on somebody's appearance, based on somebody's actions. Just little things that you can't really control about yourself. And that's never going to end. and I don't think profiling is either.
So is there anything we can do about that?
I think that everybody can come to terms with the fact that you are indeed at least a little bit judgmental against everybody that is not you. By coming to terms with that, you can force yourself to not act on those judgments and how they're presenting themselves to the world instead of what they can't control.
So what you're saying, if it's safe to say, that it's an individual thing, they got to search their own inventory and not do it.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Willow. We appreciate your comment. From Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM. And in this segment, our topic is profiling. We're here in Portland, Oregon at Terry Strong Park on Ground Zero in the homeless community. And today I'm here with
Jose Sirica.
Jose Sirica, how long have you been houseless?
I have been houseless now for 7 months.
Okay. Where are you from?
I'm from here, Portland.
Uh-huh. And how did you get into this, if you want to explain in short how you got into this situation?
Oh, okay. Well, a couple of years back when all the foreclosures and the illegal foreclosures were going on, I was a pastor at a home church and living with my mentor. And he went through an illegal foreclosure and they took the house that was our church. And nobody could really figure out how they were able to do that, and they weren't even able to produce the paperwork. They just went ahead and pushed it through, and we went ahead and we vacated the house, thinking that it was just going to be taken and resold. And after that, the Occupy movement hit, and I was able to find out exactly how they went around doing all these illegal foreclosures, and so I got involved in the issues at hand, and so that's pretty much kind of started the ball rolling for me.
Okay, and that breaks that Grecian myth of homeless people being drug addicts or prostitutes or anything like that. So you just one of the person that was caught in this capitalist way of making people houseless.
Absolutely.
In the time you've been on the streets, or even maybe if you wasn't on the street, have you ever been profiled?
Before I was houseless, no. I can't say that I was ever necessarily profiled. But after being houseless, I started noticing that just having my dog would get me stopped. Mm-hmm. And have the registration on my dog checked out. And then, of course, they would be questioning me and all this other stuff, and looking at my backpack, other things like that. And so then I started realizing that about the third time that I was actually stopped, I started realizing I fit a profile that they keep checking into.
And so they're doing a little bit that now, right now, by where you decide to rest on the sidewalk, the police are going through backpacks.
Yeah, they've been doing, especially Homeland Security here at Terry Shrunk. If you come into the park off of the public street, off the sidewalk, you're subject to having your backpack thoroughly searched. And we have been popping tents here during the day, during the open hours, and they demand that we keep the tent doors open and everything in full view. They call that an administrative security check.
So let's paint a picture for the listening audience who don't know about houselessness and how houseless people get profiled. You saying that if you come in this park with a backpack, you're liable for search. Is that just houseless people or people that work or city officials, or is it everybody?
Supposedly everybody, but I haven't ever seen them check everybody. They've just been checking the houseless people.
So how could they tell the difference between a house and a houseless person?
Well, they look at all your manner of dress. You know, some people are not as clean as others. Some people look like they have, you know, they're tired. You know, they're carrying all kinds of, you know, goods with them, you know, shopping carts, all kinds of different ways. But they're very selective. And also they see the same people kind of over and over. And so then they start to pick them out.
So that is how the police is able to profile a person by their dress, their mannerism, and their sentiment of values that they kept, that they keeping with them, because they don't have a place, a home to put it in.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, how does that feel when you're being profiled? How does that make you feel?
Well, it makes me, personally, I feel outraged by it, because that I know I'm not doing anything wrong. I've broken no laws. I'm actually out here trying to do good things for people. I'm trying to keep, you know, any kind of criminal element maybe at bay or just noticeable to where nobody gets hurt. Just trying to keep people safe here, because we do sleep in numbers for that safety aspect. So we try to watch out for each other. But I get pretty outraged by it, because I'm not doing anything wrong. And they're going basically just upon my appearance and where I'm at the time. If I'm in the group, standing around with a group of people, then they assume that I'm just one of them.
So how do you see profile ending, and what campaign is out there that do this work?
Wow. I'm looking at this thing from a whole civil rights sort of issue. We're supposed to be free from having these kinds of things happen to us. But yet, little by little, incrementally, these things are just like becoming more and more frequent. And I don't know if I actually see an end to it anytime soon. There would have to be some really serious legislation or something that would have to stop them from having any rights to do these things to us.
Do you know any organization out there that's trying to stop profiling?
Well, I know that the city started this thing called the Office of Equity in the Department of Human Rights. Then I also know that the city also signed on with the Title VI plan. They adopted the Title VI plan, with it's an anti-discrimination act. And so if they signed on to those things, then they should just automatically be stopping, but they don't. So I think that this Office of Equity just doesn't really have any teeth.
And those are the difference, because they more or less the academic organizations. Mm. But what about any grassroots organizations?
Grassroots organizations, there's plenty. I mean, there are people. There's Sisters of the Rose. There's R2-D2. There's all these activists that are actually formerly houseless people and houseless people who have gotten together and started to build some kind of a coalition and starting hopefully unify here really quick and soon to show the city that we're unifying under this kind of this problem. And we're just going to say enough is enough.
What does ending profiling mean to you? Are you trying to help with this work, or is that a goal or an effort that you would like to do?
Yeah, that's a goal I'm trying to move towards myself, is to get more involved with some of the people who are banding together to create this coalition and try to build some real strength amongst the people on a grassroots level.
Does the way... And this is just me figuring out from listening to you. The way that the police profile houseless people, people of color, do that remind you of 1936 Germany when the Nazis were stopping?
Well, you know, it's really interesting, because after the movement actually started, I actually started looking back into some history and on how Nazi Germany started incrementally targeting, you know, specific people. And of course they wore the gold stars on their lapel, and I'm starting to feel like, you know, like how long is it going to be before a houseless person has to wear something like a gold star? It's kind of spooky. It is.
Pay attention, be aware, and thank you, Jose, for being on our show.
No
thank
problem
you. To bring some love and get here today. Picket line, picket signs, don't punish me with brutality.
so you can see.
This is Ibrahim Mubarak for Right to Survive Radio, KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And today we're in Portland, Oregon, on Ground Zero in a houseless community. And our topic is profiling. And I'm here today with
MacD.
MacD, who are you and where are you from?
Well, you know, I am a homeless individual, and I am from California. San Francisco.
How long have you been a homeless individual in California, San Francisco, and Portland, Oregon?
Well, you know, I've been homeless on and off, mostly on, for about, since 2002.
Can you explain a situation when you were profiled? Or have you ever, so I could ask this question, have you ever been profiled?
You know, I get profiled a lot in places you least expect it. You know, I was profiled in a hospital for being homeless. I felt I was treated differently because I knew that I wasn't housed at the time. I felt their attitude toward me during my treatment could have been better. And I think it's because of my homelessness.
How did that make you feel? What does that
feel? It makes me feel like I have to lie or change who I am to fit their mold of what they think a citizen is. I'm not going to do that.
Did it make you feel less than? Did you get upset? I mean, what was your emotion?
You know, it made me sad because, you know, I know personally, being homeless for such a long time, I know what the attitudes are. But it's the other person that, you know, is more disadvantaged than I am even, that, you know, I think what they go through, and it really, really breaks my heart.
How do you see profiling happening in Portland?
Well, you know, it's going to be everywhere. You know, profiling happens. You know, it's a damn shame, but there's not a whole lot we could do about it, but be true to yourself. You know, I've been profiled by the police. I could be walking in the store with the same size bag as some lady dressed nice, she's got a job, and I'm the one that's asked to put my bag down, like my lesser than a regular person, like I'm a thief or a criminal. And it, you know, you can't help but think about the disparity and the fairness in which you've been treated. It's just uncalled for, unnecessary, and it's discriminatory.
Does this happen when you go look for work or housing also?
It does. You know, they say, you know, get a job, you got to have a job. To get housing, you have to be housed. And it's so true. They don't have a recent rental history of you. They put you on the bottom of the list compared to someone who is currently renting.
Have you seen the houseless being profiled?
You can't help but notice it, you know. Some ways are more overt than others. A lot of times, just a shadow comes over people, and you can tell they're thinking negatively towards the people that are disadvantaged by being houseless. And, you know, it's a stigma that, you know, you can't avoid. You're going to see it every day.
How would they be able to tell if a person was houseless or not? And that always confused me. I don't know. How can you tell if a person is houseless?
You know, it's worse than you think. If you can just tell by looking at somebody that are houseless, then you're a better man than I. But they automatically assume that you're houseless, it seems, unless you prove that you're not. They will look at your clothes, you know. I mean, if you have, like, new shoes and a backpack, but holes in your jeans, you're avant-garde. But they look at you, maybe it could be a beard or less than a day's washing, you know, for your clothes or something. And as the stigma goes up, the walls are in place, and then the stereotypes begin.
Yeah, I mean, like, you work, and sometimes I've seen you come with paint, dust, or, you know, dirt on you. So how they know it's not the type of work that you do that got your clothes that way? Or those are not work clothes, so you want to get your good clothes clean, you have them dirty, you know?
In my current living situation, I'm fortunate to be able to take a little bit better care of myself than people living on a park bench. So, you know, I got that going for me. But yeah, you know, it is hard to tell. But like I say, you know, if you are that hard worker, they will not give you credit for being the hard worker. They will discount you for being homeless. That's how bad the stereotypes are these days.
Mm. Have you ever been profiled by the police?
The police, I don't know what sixth sense they do have, but, you know, they could just, you know, look at you, and they're going to err on the side of caution and assume you're homeless and loitering or otherwise break the law. Maybe you're drinking or have some kind of illegal substance on you. That is their attitude. That is, you know, where they're coming from. And it's a really hard stigma to overcome because you already know what they're thinking. You're not getting any credit, any benefit of the doubt. You automatically assume guilty just because you're there.
Have you ever seen police profile the homeless? Do they just come up and tell them to move? Or, I don't know, explain that to people who don't know much about that. I mean, listening audience.
Well, you know, people do gather on the street, especially young people.
Yeah.
Who, most of them are not unhoused, you know. Mm-hmm. And police will go there and automatically just assume that, you know, they're up to no good. They need to be dispersed. They'll start doing warrant checks. They'll write tickets for loitering. You know, otherwise, you know, use that as an excuse to harass them. And basically, it's under the guise of protecting the citizenry from houselessness. And, you know, it's unfair to everybody. Me and my friends, we have no problem hanging on a street corner, maybe doing a little bebopping or something like that, mind our own business. And the police want to disperse us because they think we're some kind of crowd. I think it's unfair, and I think it's prejudicial. And really, it just is a bad taste in your mouth.
Mm-hmm. How do you see profiling ending?
You know, it's the thing that is, you know, they ask, how are you going to end houselessness? How are you going to end profiling? You're not. You're not. People are going to be people. You know, one man is smart, a crowd of people are stupid. And that's just how it generally goes. There's a stigma with that, hysteria. You know, you got groups of people, you know, they're always looking for faults, and they're going to find the negativity wherever they go because that's the only thing they're hunting for. So I'm just thinking, you can do the best you can by making yourself aware of your rights, aware of actions and activities that are going around you, become a part of things to help better educate yourself on what your rights are and what opportunities you have. If you go for, you know, a greater understanding of what there is out there available to you, you can't help but make yourself better aware of what needs to be done, and you'll find yourself your niche and what you can do to contribute to the betterment of wherever it is you do find yourself.
So tell me this, is profiling a thin line with discrimination?
It's a means to discriminate. That's the only reason for profiling, is so you can discriminate.
So what you're saying, profile is a tool to discriminate?
Absolutely. That's the biggest gun in their weaponry.
Are there any campaigns or organization out there to help solve this profiling?
You know, working on the Homeless Bill of Rights, you know, when you have a screen of these nonprofits that are coming together, you have things like Right to Dream 2, you have things like, you know, R2D2, these things that make you aware of the constitutional, human, and civil rights of the houseless. If you contact these organizations, they'd be more than happy to direct you to a direct point of need, like whether you're a woman or a family or what have you. There's agencies that deal directly with your certain demographic, and if you just reach out, you know, they'd be more than happy to help you find the help that you yourself need in particular.
Mm-hmm. So, working to end profile, what do that mean to you and why?
I think, you know, it's not the profiling itself. It's the realization that it's going to happen, but if you are yourself in a position to defend your rights, then you could pretty much stop it where it starts. You know, they're going to come at you with their negativity, and you explain to them that, you know, you have the exact same right they do. Your situation is different. You're no less of a human being. And actually, for us who deal in the system every day, we are a little bit more aware than the average citizen exactly what your rights are, or, you know, what you can come to expect as far as being treated with respect.
So what, profile demoralizes you, it discriminates against you. No matter what color, no matter what shape or nothing you are, that's everywhere. Do you think it would ever end?
You know, I deal usually with an urban environment, the inner cities. You know, you get to the outskirts and stuff like that, you know, and pretty much a crapshoot. Here, we probably not know what we're facing. It's a battle. It's a war. They're out to get us specifically. They want to drive us out, take away the rights that we have. We don't got much, and we don't ask for much. And God knows we've gotten it. But the matter of the fact is that, you know, we're here to stay. We're not going to go away. You can stigmatize me. You can discriminate against me. But you can't change who I am. If I'm true to myself, I'm doing what I believe is the right thing. You could say what you want. I can't stop how you feel. But I can make you feel pretty stupid for it because you won't have any reason.
This is a throwback question at you, and you think about this. Do you profile?
You know, I will profile a jackbooted cop from a mile away. I know he's going to give me a bad time and bring out his ticket book. First and last word out of my mouth is going to be sir, and I try to go on with my day.
So what you're saying is protective profile.
You got to. You need to. That's how we do it.
All right. Thank you very much for coming on our show.
Thanks for having me.
Trying to make some sense of it all, but I can see it makes no sense at all.
This is Ibrahim Mubarak for Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And our topic today is profiling. And we're in Portland, Oregon on Ground Zero in Terry Shrunk Park in the Houseless Community. And today I'm here with
Beth
and Redneck.
How long have you all been houseless?
Almost 4 years.
Almost 5 years.
And you all met while you was in the streets, right?
Yes.
So that's your myth, that you can't find love in the streets. Are you from Portland or Oregon?
Originally Oklahoma.
I was born in Tacoma, grew up in Louisiana, went to high school in Oregon City, Job Corps in Glide, now I'm homeless in Portland.
Have you ever been profiled?
Yeah, usually done by the police officer by taking a report on you, your description, height, weight, eye color, hair color, outfits you tend to wear, what people most see you hang out at. Do you have finer details? I don't know.
I'm hearing like there, you can be sitting down here and they're just asking to go through your backpacks and stuff.
Yeah.
So that's illegal search without your permission, right?
Yeah.
And what about you, Beth? How'd that make you feel if you're just sitting down and they want to come search through your belongings?
I would get really irate and start yelling at them.
That makes you feel like they're violating your constitutional rights or something.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think the police look at the houseless people in this city, this state?
Problems. They see us as problems, not as actual people.
Uh-huh. And what about you? How do you think the police view the houseless people?
In my personal opinion, I think they view them as an eyesore. Camps become so cluttered with trash that it becomes an eyesore to the public. They call in and make the complaints and say, well, this is the public's park. They're making it da-da-da-da-da and making it unfit for the public to be there.
Only if you have money you can be there.
Only if you have money to be there, should you be in the park, is the higher class public's view of us. We're trash, we're an eyesore, we should be in the gutter because, I mean, look at where they have us sleep. In between the trash cans. So essentially they're calling us gutter trash.
Yeah. Yeah.
The revolution is coming. And it will come. It will get here. And when it does, we'll gladly stand shoulder to shoulder when the fight comes. For those of us, for those that are in their houses, I hope they're ready for it.
Good.
Because it's going to be a day to reckon. But in the end, they'll understand why. They'll understand that we're not fighting to take away our freedoms. We're fighting against the government because they have been piece by piece altering the Constitution, altering the Bill of Rights, and they have piece by piece been taking away our human rights. And if people would go back and read their history books, Benjamin Franklin stating, those that do not learn from their history are doomed to repeat it.
You better believe it. So, Beth, well, how do you see profiling ending, and what do you think you can do to stop it?
Basically, we could just protest and refuse to allow people to, well, police to look through our bags. It's takes too much time and money to do that, and it's kind of stupid.
So they don't realize that the houseless community is the real melting pot where everybody is at.
What they don't realize is that they are failing to learn from their history, and they are allowing their history to repeat itself because the government is taking away our rights. And because of that, we are essentially becoming what they were in the very beginning.
Thank you much, and I'm happy to have you on our show. They never took the time to wonder about self-destruction. Yeah, it was self-destruction. Self-destruction. Yeah, it was self-destruction.
This is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And today we're in Portland, Oregon, in Ground Zero in a houseless community, and our topic is profiling. And today I'm here with
Emmanuel Price.
And Emmanuel Price, what organization are you from or are you working with in regards to profiling?
Well, I formerly worked for CIO, Center for Intercultural Organizing, and right now I work for my organization, which is SCAFE. Its acronym means Second Chances Are For Everyone, and it's all about reducing recidivism and helping men and women transition into society after incarceration. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure they deal with profiling as well.
So how long have you been doing this well-needed work?
I've been doing it about 6 years. So I've traveled from Portland, Oregon to Hampton, Virginia, Richmond, Virginia, even to Atlanta, Georgia, to collect different stories and get different data from people who face the same barriers or who have been racially profiled or just profiled in general. So about 6 years, roughly.
And where does this bill stand, and what can our listener do to get it passed?
Well, what the listeners can do is to participate in any type of educational forum that is taking place, whether it's with CIO or whether it's with any other local nonprofit or different agency. And the more information that we have around racial profiling, the better the chances are that we will have our voices heard, and the better the chances people will not be profiled. So some of the things I do is just kind of go out and educate my community and young teens and even older adults to let them know that this is an issue that we've been facing for years. And it's unfortunate that we have to wait till we're almost 30 and above to start pushing these policies and trying to get things in place when it should have happened hundreds of years ago. But now that things are shifting, it seems like people are starting to pay more attention and notice some of the disparities and barriers that people face when they're being profiled. So a lot of, I would say, participate in CIO. Anytime you can go down to Salem and lobby or sit in on an informational hearing, do that as well, because the more people and the more voices that we give to this problem, more likely we'll be heard, we'll get, you know, some type of policy in place, and just start holding people accountable. And those are things that I do on my own. And I'm also learning as I go with this racial profiling campaign. There are certain things and in areas that I need to be a little bit more polished. But all that comes with education and surrounding myself with like-minded people.
Okay. I know that you mentioned that it shouldn't take till we reach 30, and this something should have been happening hundreds of years ago. And I agree with you. However, when this government, I hope that's safe to say, when this government killed Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, Robert F. Kennedy, John F. Kennedy, all the strong leaders that was fighting for racial equality, do you think that's where the rights, the activism, the fight dropped and left?
I do. And you know what? I had this conversation maybe a couple weeks ago. I was like, not that I wanted to be alive in the 60s or 50s and 70s, but back then it was such a strong movement. It was so much community and unity, and it wasn't just black and brown. It was black, brown, white. Everybody was on the same page as far as dismantling racism and oppression and depression. So it's unfortunate that Martin Luther King and Malcolm X and prominent figures like that were taken out by the government or a different entity. And because of that, I feel like our movement has slowed down. And we've had some progress and some victories over the years, but it's a problem that I deal with every day, that we deal with every day. And if they were here today, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation right now.
Exactly.
We would be thinking about which one of us is going to be the next president, which one of us is going to run for mayor next. You know, it would be an even playing field to where we would have to sit down and have this data all the time or this conversation all the time. So they played a very big part in, you know, this movement. And we need leaders like yourself who are strong and articulate, who can get this message across now, even more now than we did back then. And even though it's 2013 and, you know, our president is, you know, of color and things of that nature, there's still a lot of things that we still need help with.
Exactly. Now, with this bill, how would it be protecting people being harassed by police profiling?
So this bill, it would have some of the police officers retreat before using deadly force. Mm-hmm. It would say that you can't pull someone over just based on their description or the color of skin or what they look like or because they're wearing a baseball cap. It would protect people like that, like us. It would protect people who just leisurely minding their business. So if, let's say, for instance, I get pulled over and I don't know my rights, you know, the officers or whoever, not they don't have a right, but they can start going down the chain of commands. Look, can I search your car? If I don't know my rights and if I don't know they don't have to have a warrant to search the car, then I'm going to be say yes and okay. And out of that, kids and adults, they get more charges because they don't know that they can be pulled. They don't know they'd have to get out the car without a warrant and so right. on and so forth. So that leads to other charges. So it would protect folks around that profiling piece. Like, you can't pull me over illegally. You can't search my car illegally. You can't just judge me on my skin color or the way I'm dressed or the neighborhood that I'm in. You can't do any of that. Or you can't look at my car because it has tinted windows and there may be some nice music coming from it. You can't pull me over. But you have to have a justifiable cause to do that. So it would protect some of those areas that, you know, we face. And I know there's some other information that I'm lacking right now, but...
But I think they get the message.
Yeah.
They get the message. Now, we face a different type of profiling, and that's when our social status, you know. And in a houseless community, if a person look like, perceived that they homeless or houseless, they can't use the public, where they can't use the restroom because they see you have to patronize this business, the restroom. You can't go into certain places because, or if you're walking down the street, the police will stop and say you look like a drug dealer or that you own drugs or what are you in this community for? We know you don't live here. So that's a different type of profiling that people in the houseless community face, whether they're a person of color or not. So would this bill be protecting them also, or would it be pertaining to them also, or this is just a separate type of bill?
I think it would bleed over into protecting them as well, and not to make it all about race and ethnicity, but some of the instances that you mentioned. Just because a person looks a certain way, that does not give you a right to pull them over. They're not a drug dealer. They may be homeless. They may not be homeless. So I think some of the racial profiling will trickle down into the homeless or people who are homeless or will soon to be homeless. I think it will trickle down into that and protect them as well because it's profiling, whether it's racial profiling, whether it's just basic profiling. You're profiling people. It's not right. You shouldn't do it. And there's a way to go about doing it correctly. So that means whether they're pulling somebody over or talking to somebody, collecting the right data. This is a male or a female, or they may be a transgender. They may identify not as he or she, but as they, him or her. And they can collect the right information. So when they write the report, they articulate it right on the report. So that way they can't say, oh, this person was, you know, stopped and frisked because of this reason, or he looked homeless or she looked homeless. So now they have to collect everything. They're white, black, male or female.
Exactly.
So I think it would trickle down and bleed over and help everyone. That I would hope it would. That would be my personal opinion. And I should do some more research and look into it more because I'm not too sure. But just from the general perspective of what I'm thinking about, why wouldn't it?
Right, yeah, why would
it? You know, protect everyone.
Because that's what they're doing now. They targeting and they profiling. And so I would think that we're working on a homeless Bill of Rights campaign, which have some of that in there, that because you look like this or you seem can't wash your clothes on time or you know you can't afford it, don't mean that they treat you any other different.
Right.
Than anybody with a different social status. And this goes along with a different color of your skin also. So we're hoping that that can bleed over or tie it into that. Last year, this guy graduated, this African-American guy graduated from school, and his parents bought him a new car, and him and a couple of his friends was driving, and police stopped him 3 times. And they was not in a bad car. They didn't have hoodies on. They was just dressed like a middle class African-American, but they still got stopped because they was in a good car. So is that going to trickle down from economic status or social status, or is it just for right now the people of color that's being targeted or profiled, no matter what economic status you're in?
I would say, it's for people of color, no matter what economic status you're in, what social class you're in, because when it comes down to it, sometimes all people see is color. All they see is, you know, ethnicity. So it doesn't matter if you're the president of Boeing, you know, if you're African American or Latino or Eritrean, you're still gonna experience that. So, like the saying says, it takes a village to raise a child. It takes a village to raise a child, and it's gonna take a village to raise this profiling mm-hmm. child, because this profiling is a child and it's a baby, but we want it to grow to be a healthy adult. So we have to make sure we put the right nutrients and the right vitamins into this child. When it's an adult, everybody can benefit from it, and that profiling child turns into an adult, and it'll have little racial profiling babies, and hopefully those kids will go out and reproduce, and that way we can end this racial profiling, this profiling which cuts across every ethnic and demographic and social class lines. Everybody's affected by it, but it's going to take the people who may have more education or a little bit more dollars to add their voice to it as well. Because, you know, you and I can do all the grassroots stuff we want. But if we don't have somebody up higher advocating for us and saying, hey, this is not right, y'all need to get it together. And how can we help the community? How can we make this an even playing field for everybody? So it affects everybody, but we need the help of everyone. It's not something, well, it is something you and I can do on our own, but it takes...
Is there something that you think would be taught in school or something to educate more people on what happens if they pull over or what happens if they feel they're being targeted or profiled?
This is something
that level.
It's sad to say, but yes, it needs to be taught in schools. Mm-hmm. There has to be some type of curriculum to where they teach kids and young adults. If you get pulled over, you do A, B, and C. You keep your hands on that wheel. You say, yes, sir, no, sir. You don't make any sudden movements. And it's messed up that we may have to teach that in schools. But we may have to do that to reduce some of the killings, some of the violence, some of the disparities and barriers that we face in low-income or communities of color. And it's something that should be taught. Like, for example, there is a law in Oregon where all teachers have to teach multicultural studies.
Yes.
No one's, as far as I know, no one is doing that. This brother named Karanja Cruz, who has a program, Journey to Freedom. He has a board game. He's trying to implement that, and he's trying to make sure that Oregon upholds that law and that policy. Mm-hmm. And in that, we can educate the kids and the teens and tell them, these are the ABCs of what you do and what you don't do.
Where do we go from here in the next steps? What's the next step?
I would say the next steps is to basically rally your community, spread the word, talk to everybody, whether they have like minds or not. Education is the best way to let everybody know what's going on. Anytime you can participate in a forum or a symposium or informational meeting with Center for Intercultural Organizing or SCAFE or Better People or any of these organizations, just involve yourself every chance you get. And then look to your local leaders, your government, your commissioners. Question them, call them, because they work for us.
Exactly.
Basically, we pay our tax dollars. They work for the people. And who are the people? We are the people.
Exactly.
It seems like we often suffer a lot. And they make all these decisions up there in the clouds, and we're affected by it. So the more we raise our voice, the more we're aware, the more we call them and pressure them, then they'll have to make those changes. It's like a bill collector. A bill collector is not going to stop calling you until he or she gets that money.
Exactly.
So we need to take the role of the bill collector and call our commissioners and our legislative people and our faith-based leaders and community partners and let them know this is something that we're standing up for. This is something that we want to see change, because this world is changing so fast.
Yeah.
And before we know it, it'll be all ethnicities. It already is, but it's going to be more color. It's going to be inclusive of everybody. So let's deal with this now instead of waiting till everybody's here and then they want to have some big powwow meeting of, oh, how can we address this? No, let's address it now so we don't have to do it another 100 or 30 years from now.
Exactly.
We're already late, but we're not too late to make a change. So inform yourself, get involved with any community group, faith-based organization, listen to the radio, come talk to you, my brother, and just get all the education we need, because it starts with us. And if we don't advocate and fight or rally for ourselves, then they won't. They'll just say, oh, you're fine. Oh, we'll deal with you in another 2 or 3 years. So,
okay. I want to thank you. And thank if you. Anything you need us to do to join right solidarity with you, let us know.
I'm so proud, man, how strong your family is, homie. Know you I just want to tell you something, bro. You'll forever live on. Live on. Forever live on. Cause you think that I'm doing wrong don't mean that you right. Right. Cause the ones that you think that won't, them the ones that might. That might. Serve people in this world the system don't like. Don't like. Where you live and what you work is how they value your life. Your life. Trayvon, I want you to know, love, homie, you really touched me. You'll forever live on. Live on.
You're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM, and I'm Lisa Fay. Well, it's been an extremely sensitive and charged hour on police profiling. After listening to the discrimination, injustice, and misuse of power from the police, we here at Right to Survive Radio are shocked and appalled at the frequency that this occurs. We are also determined to support all efforts to end police profiling and uphold police accountable for their actions. For comments on tonight's show, you can reach us on Facebook or at www.wordpress.com or email us at r2s.pdx@gmail. Right to Survive meets at Sisters of the Road Cafe on the second and fourth Thursday of each month from 5 to 7 p.m. All are welcome. And on a lighter note, Right to Dream 2 is having their second anniversary party and fundraiser on Saturday, October 12th from noon to 5 p.m. There will be carnival games, prizes, a silent auction, music, some live from local artists, and food. Ooh, I like food. I hope you will come and join us in our celebration. Bring your family, friends, kids. Everyone is welcome to support positive achievements in the houseless community. That's noon to 5 p.m. on October the 12th. Remember to be kind to someone today, and a smile gives lasting rewards. Good night.
And you are tuned to KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland. The time is 7:01. Up next is Hard Knock Radio right after these messages.
KBOO 90.7 FM Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Afro-Caribbean All Music Festival.